So today I'm going to be talking about potentially preventable hospitalizations in American Indian and Alaskan Native people receiving care through IHS from 2008 to 2013. And I want to first start by defining what we mean by potentially preventable hospitalizations. This is actually a set of evidence-based indicators developed by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and it uses routinely collected hospital inpatient discharge data to identify what they call ambulatory care sensitive conditions. So these are conditions for which good outpatient care can potentially prevent hospitalization. And this indicator comprises 14 acute and chronic health conditions. The acute conditions are pneumonia, urinary tract infection, and dehydration. And the chronic conditions fall into the categories of diabetes, chronic respiratory disease, and chronic circulatory disease. The indicator is intended to provide an insight into the quality of the healthcare system outside the hospital, even though the indicator is based on inpatient data. The acute potentially preventable hospitalization conditions measure the timeliness of receiving care, and the chronic conditions measure the effectiveness of receiving care. The potentially preventable hospitalization conditions represent the tip of the proverbial iceberg, meaning that it's intended to be a very sensitive screening tool to help flag potential quality problems in the ambulatory healthcare system in general. So even though we're only looking at 14 conditions, it's intended to reflect care of care in the ambulatory healthcare system in general beyond just those 14 conditions. So the Indian Health Service healthcare system serves 2.2 million American Indian Alaska Native people through a network of over 679 hospitals, clinics, and health stations on or near Indian reservations. And these facilities are predominantly located in rural primary care settings in 35 states. And they're managed by IHS, tribal, and urban Indian health programs. In addition, there's the Purchased Referred Care Program, which allows IHS to purchase services from private healthcare providers in areas without any IHS or tribal direct care facilities, and this is sometimes referred to as contract care. So the objective of our study was to describe the trends in the potentially preventable hospitalization rate among American Indian and Alaska Native people by using IHS data for 2008 to 2013. We obtained data from the IHS National Patient Information Reporting System, and this includes discharges from all IHS, tribally operated, and contract care hospitals. We identify potentially preventable hospitalizations as defined by AHRQ using the technical specifications, which are based on ICD-9 codes. The unit of analysis for this project was hospital discharge, and the denominator for rate calculations was the IHS user population, which we define, or is generally defined, as persons who received at least one healthcare service through IHS within a 3-year period. We calculated the annual and average annual hospitalization rates per 1,000 persons and trends in the rates from 2008 to 2013 by using Poisson regression, and we analyzed the hospital rates by IHS administrative areas. The IHS is organized under 12 administrative areas, as shown in this map here, and we group them into 7 regions for this analysis. And these regions are the North Plains West, the North Plains East, the East Region, the Southern Plains, Southwest, Alaska, and the West Region. But for this analysis, we did not include the West Region because neither the Portland or the California areas have any tribally operated hospitals. California does not report its contract care by discharge diagnoses, and Portland has limited funds available for contract care. So we identified a total of 383,082 hospital discharges in American Indian Alaska Native adults aged greater than or equal to 18 years from 2008 to 2013. 15.2% of all those discharges were for potentially preventable hospitalization conditions, and they were evenly divided between acute conditions, which accounted for 7.5% of all discharges, and chronic conditions, which accounted for 7.7% of all discharges. So this table describes the discharges for acute potentially preventable hospitalization conditions from 2008 to 2013. And we see that a greater proportion of the acute potentially preventable hospitalizations were in females at 63%, and correspondingly the rate was also higher for females compared to males at 6.2 per thousand persons compared with 4.3. By age group, we see that the majority of the potentially preventable hospitalizations occurred in persons aged 45 to 84. And when we look at the rate, we see that there's a stepwise increase in the rate of hospitalizations, starting at 2.0 per thousand persons for those aged 18 to 44, and going up to almost 50 for those aged 85 years and older. Now this table is similar to the previous one, except now we're looking at discharges for chronic conditions. And in this case, the discharges for chronic conditions were evenly divided between males and females, but the rate was slightly higher among males at 6.0 per thousand compared with females at 5.0. When we look at the rates by age group, we again see that the majority of the chronic condition discharges occurred in persons aged 45 to 84 years. And the rate again increased with each category of the age group from 2.2 up to 23.4 per thousand persons. Now this graph depicts the acute and chronic potentially preventable hospitalization trends by acute and chronic conditions on the on your left axis, on the y-axis on your left. That will correspond to the bars and represents the number of hospitalizations, and the y-axis on the right corresponds to the line, which represents the age-adjusted hospitalization rate. The red bars and line represent the acute conditions, and the green bars and the line correspond with the chronic conditions. And what we see is that from 2008 to 2012, there was a 25% reduction in the acute potentially preventable hospitalization rate and a 17% reduction in the chronic potentially preventable hospitalization rate. But from 2012 to 2013, there's actually a 13% increase in the acute rate and an 18% increase in the chronic potentially preventable hospitalization rate. We broke down those trends by IHS administrative region, and we see a similar pattern in all regions for acute conditions, where there's a general decline from 2008 to 2012 before increasing again in 2013. The two exceptions here are Alaska and North Plains East, where it remained relatively stable during that time period. We also looked at the trends in chronic potentially preventable hospitalization rates by administrative region. And again, except for the Alaska region, generally there appears to be a trend towards a decline from 2008 to 2012 before increasing from 2012 to 2013. So to summarize, our data indicate that the rate of potentially preventable hospitalizations declined in the IHS from 2008 to 2012. The declines in the potentially preventable hospitalization rate for acute conditions indicate improvements in the timeliness of ambulatory healthcare. The declines in the rate for chronic conditions indicate improvements in the effectiveness of ambulatory healthcare. The rates of the potentially preventable hospitalizations increased from 2012 to 2013, and this could indicate a potential reversal of the quality improvements. The burden of potentially preventable hospitalizations was highest among adults aged 45 to 84 years, but it was adults aged 65 years and older who were at highest risk for having a potentially preventable hospitalization. Our study has some limitations. Our analysis did not account for other potential factors that affect the potential preventable hospitalization rates, such as other policy or programmatic changes during that time, or changes in the underlying population prevalence of risk factors for the diseases that are included in that indicator. And also, there are the challenges with using any administrative data set, so it's possible that we double counted readmissions or transfers. Hospital transfers for the same person, and it's possible that there's some miscoding or incomplete coding of potentially preventable conditions. As I mentioned to start that the potentially preventable hospitalization indicator is intended to be a screening tool to flag potential quality problems. Therefore, our results represent a starting point for further evaluation. And this could include trying to understand the reasons for the regional differences or trying to determine which aspects of the IHS budget are most correlated with the ambulatory healthcare quality trends that we see. And understanding those trends could help inform the development of quality improvement programs. In addition, our analysis provides a baseline for evaluating the impact of future interventions to improve ambulatory healthcare quality. I'd like to acknowledge folks at the IHS and my colleagues at CDC Arctic Investigations Program for their help with this analysis, and I'm happy to take any questions. Question in the back. Three questions. So the first question was whether there's any comparison with other racial ethnic groups. And to my knowledge, not nationally. But the motivation for the study was actually something that we did in Alaska. So in Alaska, we have a Healthy Alaska 2020 initiative. One of the 25 indicators, health indicators, is to reduce the potentially preventable hospitalization rate. In Alaska, what we were able to do is combine the IHS data set with our state inpatient databases to create a comprehensive statewide database. And in that data set, we initially looked at the potentially preventable hospitalization rate to inform the Healthy Alaska 2020 initiative. But when we looked at it, we found that American Indian Alaskan Native people in Alaska were substantially more likely to experience a potentially preventable hospitalization condition. So for acute conditions, it was the odds ratio was 4.7, and for chronic conditions, it was about 2.5. And as I mentioned, the acute conditions reflect the timeliness of receiving care, and that makes sense in Alaska because most of Alaska lives in urban centers, but Alaska Native people live disproportionately in rural Alaska. Small villages that are accessible only by planes, and so it's possible that there is a reason for a delay in seeking care that could have led to the hospitalization. So I don't know enough about the other IHS regions to know how generalizable that disparity is to the other regions. In terms of what happened in 2013, it's hard to say, but I have a hypothesis, and I'm going to say that I'm speaking for myself and possibly speculating, but this could require some additional evaluation. But one of the reasons that I actually looked at this question was back in 2012, we knew that the sequester was going to happen. And at that time, there were editorials talking about how every health entity, like Medicare and Veterans Affairs programs, were going to be excluded from the sequester except IHS. And there is the director of the IHS at that time talking about how this could have health consequences, that IHS is already chronically underfunded, that this is a stressed system, and that if you were going to cut 5%, that this is going to have adverse health consequences. At that time, we thought about how can we look at that question and really to have a good indicator to do it. But in the course of doing the Healthy Alaska 2020 project, we stumbled upon this indicator, which again is supposed to be very sensitive for measuring changes in healthcare quality. And so we decided to apply it to IHS trends nationally overall. And so this figure here now shows the same lines again for the rate in potentially preventable hospitalization rates. But this time we're trying to correlate it with changes in the IHS budget. And it's hard to see, but the general trend is that from 2008 to 2012, there are basically annual increases through 2012. And we actually, I didn't show this here, but going back to 2001 until 2012, there are annual increases in the IHS budget by almost, say like $1 billion, from $3 billion to $4 billion. But in 2013, there is, again, that slight drop-off that you see, which doesn't look like a lot, but it's 5% into a system that's already stressed. Most of that happened after January 1, so it was all backloaded as well. So even though the fiscal year overlaps 2012-2013, all of that cut happened in 2013. So that could explain why there's such a dramatic increase in the rate in 2013. But we'd need to confirm it. I think additional years of data would help. Trying to look at some of the other things I talked about to see if there are other changes within IHS that could have accounted for that. You know, I think adjusting for those would help us make a stronger case. But I think it's important to make that case because in Alaska right now, we're expecting, unrelated to any changes in the Affordable Care Act modification, a 12% cut in reimbursement for physicians, 5% cut for hospitals. And so that's another situation where this type of analysis could help. I mean, we depend a lot on Medicaid for providing care at ANTHC. And so if we can show, listen, this is what 5% cut did for our patient population back in 2013. Let's not repeat that mistake again. So I think that's some of the motivation for trying to do that again. And remind me of the third question again. Well, this is the first time I think we've looked at this, applying this quality indicator within IHS. And so we are working with IHS, IHS colleagues. So I think that will be the next step, is to really delve into some of the budget numbers, try to figure out what exactly changed with the budget from 2012-2013, for example, and try to map out how, you know, those changes could be tied into some of these broad trends that we're looking at. Even within the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium as well, we're trying to make this sort of an indicator that is followed on a regular basis when the clinical directors meet, so they kind of have a top-level number that they can look at to see if all of the other quality improvement initiatives that they're taking on, like, you know, smoking cessation programs, or, you know, trying to have navigators for the patients that are at highest risk for being rehospitalized, trying to see if those things make a difference. So we are starting the discussions with our partners right now. Yes?
One quick question. We have time for one quick question.
That's a good thought. I guess that's where I would have to talk to my colleagues. I guess it would make sense that if there's some component of it that is that changes with you know, allocation per person, then I think we should adjust it. If there's a certain amount of fixed cost regardless of how many people are in the service, then maybe we wouldn't adjust it. So I would have to take a closer look at that. Yeah. We did look at them by indicator, but I specifically chose not to show this here because in a previous presentation for the Alaska subset, what we found is when we presented the rates for, say, UTI and CHF, people started to focus just on, say, CHF and feel like if we can address CHF, then our numbers look better. And that's not the way this is intended. CHF is in there because it's common, it reflects care in general, but if you just focus on CHF, then you forget chronic liver disease or chronic kidney disease. So just to avoid that confusion, to highlight the point that this is really just an indicator for the broader health system, chose not to present the data for each specific condition. Great, thank you.